Hello there, and welcome along to this week's Racing Postcast. It is Monday the 7th of February. I'm Maddie Playle, and on this week's show I'm joined by Chris Cook and Mark Boylan, our expert team. We're going to look, of course, back on two wonderful days at the Dublin Racing Festival, as well as Grade 1 action at Sandown. So many Cheltenham clues, but also some wider theories, hopefully, that can take us through the remainder of the season. We're going to be assessing all of the star performances, much of which was dominated by Willie Mullins, before we look ahead to this weekend and one of the real standout betting contests of the season, the Betfair Hurdle. The Denman Chase and the Game Spirit are also at Newbury, as well as the Kingmaker at Warwick. But without further ado, let's start close to home for yourself and I, Chris, with Sandown and the Scilly Isles. And this horse is one we're going to compare to some of the others we mentioned a little bit later on, L'Empressé. He was a short price favourite. He jumped round wonderfully and won without breaking sweat to give Charlie Deutsch his first Grade 1 success. And it was the first in a while for his trainer, Venetia Williams, as well. How did you assess the performance?
So I love the performance. You know, he's a nice jumper, this horse, and it's going to be really interesting to see him in some top class races this spring and going forwards. But I think in the end, this was a very straightforward task for him. There was one horse in the field that was rated good enough to give him a race, which was Pick Dory, and he's just completely failed to give his running. You know, for my money, I think that has to be closely related to what's going on with the Paul Nicholls yard. And I think, you know, we're going to have to try and remember when we look back on this weekend and the races around this time that, you know, Paul's yard is just way out of form. They're on a 5% strike rate in the last fortnight, and he's been talking about it, you know, quite openly, as is his habit. He was saying at Wincanton on Thursday, when I spoke to him about it, he was saying that some of them are running fine, but some of them, you know, they appear perfectly well, nothing evidently wrong with them, but they get to a point about halfway down the back straight and the lights go out, which was sort of what seemed to happen with Pick Dory, I think. So, I mean, anyway, I wouldn't be rating the race around him. Mr. Coffey's second, rated 137. No reason to think he hasn't run his race. And L'Empressé has beaten him 21 lengths. So this is a top class horse that Venetia Williams has got. And we will find out what he's made of at the festival. I mean, you just, your instinct at the moment is to worry about how British horses match up against Irish horses. But he certainly deserves to be in the argument.
Yes, our races certainly seem to lack that depth. Mark, did you see anything from L'Empressé that would worry you if you were either a Bob Olinger or Galopin de Champ fan?
Lovely performance and a really, really nice horse. But I would echo exactly what Chris has said in terms of the strength of what he's achieved so far. Look, we're going to learn an awful lot. I think even in the early exchanges as to how strong the novice form is in the various countries, maybe in the Arklan races like that, before we even get as far as Thursday. But my gut feeling would be that we've seen a little bit more over here, but I don't want to knock the horse too much because I really like him and I really like how he goes about his job. So I think he might just fall a little bit short this time around if a peak Bob Olinger or Gallop and Deschamps turn up in the turners. But a very, very nice horse all the same.
I mean, the thing to worry about is, you know, we keep using that phrase battle hardened, and if that does matter, then he won't have that when he goes to Cheltenham in March, in a way that some of the Irish horses certainly will.
That's a good point, Chris, and one that's been made in a couple of quarters since the English were drubbed by the Irish at the festival last year. An RPR of 163, not too shabby, but when you've got horses like Galopin de Champ posting efforts of 167 and still looking like they're barely scratching the surface, that just illustrates the sort of polarised picture that we see in jumps racing these days. Let's move over to Leopardstown then, where most of the top quality action took place over the weekend, and starting off with Saturday's Nathaniel Lacey and Partners Solicitors 50,000 Cheltenham bonus for stable staff novice hurdle. That was a bit of a mouthful, wasn't it? This was the opening Grade 1 novice hurdle over 2 miles, 6 furlongs. How strong was it to start off with, Mark?
I think the best ride one of the day, and I think that's my standout takeaway from it. The winner is very good. The winner has plenty of ability, and he's a lovely, lovely pedigree. I used to love the dam, Ascana. Really, really tough staying mare. Hood fitted for the first time, did work well. I would question as to whether it might be as strong as other pieces of novice hurdle form we've seen this season. Having said that, I don't know if, on the whole, it's been the strongest year of novice hurdles collectively in Ireland. I think we've seen some very good performances from the likes of Dysart, Dynamo, Sir Gerhard, etc. I'm not sure on the whole whether we've had the same depth as we might have had in other seasons. Ginto has been very good. But I think this performance kind of confirms what I kind of half suspected about the form of the Lawlers of Nace at the Ginto won previously last month. Obviously, we didn't have Ginto here. We didn't have Journey With Me, who was bypassing it seemingly to go to Nace for an auction novice hurdle. And we didn't have Blazing Cal, obviously, who was one of the leading fancies, but is out with a setback for the Spring Festivals coming forward. He might be back for Punchestown. I can't remember exactly, but he's definitely gone for Cheltenham anyway. But, you know, while Ginto was superior to the rest of them, and I'm not using it as a stick to beat him, I would like to have seen more from Hollow Games here. I would like to have seen more from Grand Jury here. Now, maybe they haven't run up to scratch. That is a possibility. And you have to bear in mind, maybe the Henry de Bromhead's aren't exactly firing when you're talking about Grand Jury. But I think overall, my takeaway from this would have been that Manella Crooner's Albert Bartle claims were done absolutely no harm. I love the way he came home. You know, Danny Mullins really had his finger on the pulse here for knowing exactly how to get the pace of this race right. And Manella Crooner was sat off it. He's kind of a slow burning horse. You know, I get the impression even here from his hurdling technique, not that he isn't efficient, but he's just not overly swift through the air. I would have felt looking at him here, the two hurdles in the last seven furlongs, the Albert Bartlett over a little bit further. You know, he just maybe got out of his ground a little bit when Danny upped the tempo up front on the winner. Jack didn't punish him initially, but God, he responded really well. And that was probably my takeaway. I think Manella Crooner could nearly be the leading Albert Bartlett candidate for all that. I don't think as a race overall, it was a phenomenal contest for a grade one level. But still, Danny Mullins, hats off to him. Another big race win for him this season to add to his collection.
Indeed, it was a marvellous ride. I think you're spot on about the Albert Bartlett. I'm going to have a look at it a little bit later on for my weekender column. But it's a race that I think there is a bet there somewhere if you can find it. Because there's no standout horse at the moment. And you sort of illustrated exactly why Manella Crooner is now shorter than Manella Kakuna, the winner for the Albert Bartlett Novices Hurdle. Do you see them both going that way? The options for the winner could lie over shorter, perhaps?
Potentially, yeah. Like, I mean, my feeling would be that Manella Kakuna would still be okay over 2.5 in the Ballymore. And Willie has strong hand in the Supreme if he opts to go there with Sir Gerhard and Dysart Dine. We know how good the Supreme is. I wouldn't be, his Ballymore team might look a little bit more light. Now, What Do You Want, who missed this weekend, he is owned by the sponsors of the Ballymore. That could easily be where he might turn up as well. I don't really think he's of that level from what we've seen so far. I would like to see Manella Kakuna have a go at the Ballymore. You know, he wears a hood now, having fitted that. Stepping up to 3 miles, I'm not necessarily sure that's what he's absolutely crying out for. I think, you know, he won this race in good circumstances. He'll definitely stay further in the future. But for right now, considering how much depth there is maybe to the Supreme, although I take what you're saying about the Albert Bartlett, like Ginto, if he was to go down that road, and although there has been no indication of connections one way or another, I'd nearly kind of half suspect they would go that road with him. You know, the way they talk about him as a big staying horse in a lot of their quotes. I would get that feeling that they might go that road with him. And in that case, you know, if you're looking at the Ballymore, it looks a little bit more open. And I wouldn't be. I think he could run well. I'm not necessarily sure. I think he could be vulnerable to a Journey With Me potentially.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Journey With Me. Hopefully, we'll talk a bit more about the Henry de Bromhead form as we go through this postcast. But hopefully that yard turns the corner soon. Of course, Honeysuckle certainly did the business for that team on Sunday. Chris, let's take a canter through the Triumph Hurdle betting. Pied Piper is now our favourite at 2-1. You've got Vauban joint or slightly bigger in other places. He beat Phil Dore in the latest trial. Who comes out on top for you in this division at the moment? Because it's close and you can compare the different horses, can't you?
Yeah, and you've always got it in your mind that particularly with the Triumph, there's still time, isn't there, for something to appear that hadn't been on your radar at all. You know, it could even be something that hasn't run over hurdles yet, conceivably. So there's that. You know, that's what puts the brakes on me taking a short price about anything at the moment. You still got the Kempton race. What is it, the Adonis? I remember Soldatino, who just suddenly appeared and won that day and ended up winning the Triumph, and he wouldn't be the only one. But Pied Piper was just ridiculously impressive, wasn't he? And he's gone around Cheltenham and done that, which that's always eye-catching, that's always encouraging, isn't it?
And he's already beaten Vauban, of course.
Yeah, there might have been a slight sense of, you know, it was a close one, wasn't it? And maybe even some ill luck on Vauban's part. You'd have to be pretty encouraged if you did have the Antipost voucher on Vauban, and he's a listed winner on the flat as well. I would imagine that if Fildor and Pied Piper both get to Cheltenham Week, you know, in great shape, they're the same connections, aren't they? Same trainer, same owner. It must be a great temptation to split them up. Wouldn't surprise me at all if Fildor, who was fab for the Triumph, not, you know, quite recently, he might end up in a race like the Supreme, you know, getting the weight allowance. It's not tried very often, and I think the only time I can remember it working was Orla Loire, but he did win very impressively. It can be done, and I think probably those four-year-olds are getting more weight than they really deserve. So why not have a bite at two different cherries? Yeah, Pied Piper for me, though, you know, 9-4 at this stage. I guess you can get non-runner, no bet, can't you? Which insulates you against something going wrong. But I think you've still got that wild card with the Triumph Hurdle, haven't you? That something can come out of the clouds.
Talking of the Supreme, Fakir Duderi ran in it as a four-year-old, didn't he, a couple of years ago? He wasn't successful, but he's turned out to be a top-class animal. Mark, this is interesting, isn't it, between the two Elliott horses? Because before the Dublin Racing Festival, Gunn seemed set that Fildor was the better horse. I wonder if he thinks that now. And he also thought that they both go to the Triumph. What do you think's likely to have changed in the last couple of weeks?
I would nearly feel that this result of the weekend, I thought Fildor probably would have had to go. And I say this reluctantly because I backed Pied Piper for the Supreme before the last day at Cheltenham. I think Fildor nearly needed to go and win by four or five, needed to win pretty decisively to leave the Elliott camp in no doubt that they had the winner of the Triumph in the bag, let's say, and that they could take a free shot, let's say, of Pied Piper in the Supreme. You know, these owners relatively new in terms of the level of investment that they're putting into the game with Gordon Elliott, they will be absolutely seriously hungry for a Cheltenham Festival winner. And I think if you are put it this way, Pied Piper is the better horse of the two, I think, right now. I think because he has a lot of experience behind him. I love Fildor from a point of view of, I think he's not a here and now horse just this moment. I think he's got a good future ahead of him. But if you put the gun to my head, I'd nearly guess now that both of them would run on the Triumph to ensure that ownership group had the best chance of getting a Cheltenham Festival win on the board. You also bear in mind that Mighty Potter is there as well for the same owners in Supreme. It looks a brilliant Supreme, as we're all talking about. And I just wonder, Mighty Potter, he is still pretty young. You know, he's not got huge mileage on the clock. He's five, he's by Marteline. They view him as kind of a long-term prospect. I would be kind of thinking that they might well keep him to the Supreme trip over 2 miles. And this is obviously, I'm guessing, purely speculating here. I would nearly guess that they keep him to the 2 miles for the Supreme and let both Pied Piper and Fildor have a crack at the Triumph. That would set up some race. Personally, I don't see how Fildor turns it around with Vauban after the weekend right now. I think down the line, I can see Fildor maybe ending up as a really, really nice horse. There'll be some Triumph Hurdle if Vauban comes there travelling, Pied Piper comes there swinging, and Fildor is right there too. You know, it has the shape of a really, really good race. I find it very hard to split Vauban and Pied Piper.
Yeah, and I think Fildor, he's going to be benefited by a really, truly run race, isn't he? He looks like a stare in the making to me.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with you. I wouldn't disagree with you. And I when he goes over a fence as well, he got a lovely, clever technique over his hurdles. I'd really look forward to seeing that.
OK, we're going to be talking about a lot of the Irish horses and how they're going to dominate at Cheltenham, or at least we think they are at this stage. One division that I think maybe isn't so cut and dry could be the Arkle. The Irish Arkle Novice Chase, another grade one, was won by Blue Lord. Did he enhance his claims for Cheltenham by winning and surviving a stewards inquiry, Chris?
No. In fact, I think I saw the immediate reaction was that one or two bookies pushed him out, which doesn't happen very often, and that tells you something. He won narrowly, didn't he? And I think he was a bit lucky. I mean, so, OK, full disclosure, I was on Riviera d'Hôtel. But I think even if I wasn't, I'd be looking at that race and just feeling absolutely gutted for her, because, you know, she had it won, and then she just threw in this ridiculous leap at the last. It wasn't even a mistake. It wasn't as though she clouted the fence, but she just jumped it really awkwardly and landed in a heap and dropped her knitting, and then got going again. But you knew there wasn't quite going to be enough real estate for her to make up the ground. Blue Lord went across her and caused the steward's inquiry. I sort of felt that he was just far enough ahead to allow that in the immediate aftermath of jumping the fence. So I don't really feel bitter about the outcome of the steward's inquiry. But I think basically Riviere d'Etel is the better horse, and Blue Lord is just a little bit short of what you want for an Arkle. Edward Stone, I'm hopefully I was singing his praises either on here or somewhere else after Kempton. I mean, obviously it's bad luck that Fernie Hollis come out of this race, but he was like, I think he was 7-8 to 1 at the time, and much shorter now. He looks like a very plausible British winner at the Cheltenham Festival, and there's not many of those that we can talk about. You could do with the stable having a few more winners, but we'll see him again at Warwick this weekend, I think, and get a chance to impress us.
Yes, it looked like Willie Mullins could have any number of Arkle horses before this. Mark, he could still have one at the minimum. Are you sat there sort of rubbing your hands together and laughing as I'm suggesting the British might have some credible contenders in this race?
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. You know, Blue Lord, for all that I like the horse, I have not been crowning this guy as an Arkle winner. You know, I took him on at the weekend, like Chris, at back Riviere d'Etel. And your heart would go to her. You know, she's pushed Fernie Hollow so hard at Christmas, you know, and even I think she's got maybe tacked on to the pace a little bit stronger than Blue Lord did throughout this race. You know, she's there to be shot at somewhat. She makes the mistake at the last. Then she really, really rallied after having, you know, gotten tightened up a small. But I'd be with Chris, the half a length winning margin, that wasn't enough to turn it round for what had happened in the straight. Blue Lord has not convinced me in how he's seen out his races at times. You know, he came down at the last in the Supreme when he was going to be well held. I know you could say he's going to be well clear of Ballyadam and he could be well clear of the rest, but, you know, that form doesn't look spectacular in behind. Further in behind, appreciate it. He would be one of the favourites that I am dying to take on at the Cheltenham Festival, but I don't really know what with. I would like to, I think Edward Stone is a real, real player. And I think in terms of hurdles, ratings and what have you, Edward Stone is more than entitled to be banged there with Blue Lord. Better than him. I think Edward Stone is a better horse than Blue Lord. Riviere d'Etel, I still would not give up on her from an Arkle perspective. No, she's going to be a
couple
of pounds.
She's not going to get as much weight, is she, at Cheltenham, I don't think.
No, I think it's £2. I'm open to correction on that. I think it's £2 worse, but give up on her. I don't think the Blue Lord would have kept Fernie Hollow as honest over Christmas. And, you know, she's had some hard races, and she is young, but Gordon Elliott was stressing that she is getting stronger all the time. She's only 5. Like, you know, I do think we haven't seen the very best of her yet, for all that maybe we've seen more of her than others this season. But weekend's result just kind of confirmed that we already knew that Fernie Hollow's absence from this division has just blown the picture wide open. But I wouldn't give up on Riviere d'Etel. I just like a little bit more juice in the price. I think 4-1 territory, 7-2 territory. It's just a little bit short when she also has the option of going to the Mayor's Chase.
Okay, the remainder in the Arkle at Cheltenham. You've got Blue Lord at 3-1. Edward Stone at best price, 7-2. Chris is a big fan of him. Riviere d'Etel, you can get 9-2, but as Mark said, 4-1, 7-2 is the general. Third time lucky. He ran at Doncaster and won impressively, but again, probably didn't beat much. He's a best price 8-1 and it's 10-1 bar. Let's move on to the big race of the Dublin Racing Festival, one of them, which was the Paddy Power Irish Gold Cup. There was a big shock here with Conflated winning. He was well backed after being put up both by Paul Keighley and Pricewise on In the Know. So there's a plug for that show there. I think he was as big as 50-1 and the SP returned 18-1. For Davy Russell and Gordon Elliott. He beat Manella Indo. This was much better from him. And Janadil finished third. It's hard to look back on this race now and see Asterion Falange being sent off the 5-2 favourite, Mark. And your fancy Kenboy, he didn't really run his race. Similar comments apply to Frodon as well. Chris touched upon Paul Nichols' form. So do you think this is going to be a reliable Gold Cup trial?
God, I really don't know, Maddie. This is a head-scratcher for me because, you know, for all that Conflated has hinted at, been pretty smart, so confused in equal measure at times. He has, you know, looked a little bit below the top tier, and this is not a performance that I saw coming. I'll hold my hands up and hats off to anyone that did put him forward. I know, as you mentioned there, the market support tells you that there definitely were a few that fancied him. Gordon Elliott gave the line afterwards that he thought he'd win or pull up. That's what he told Eddie O'Leary beforehand. Yeah, like as a piece of form, I was looking at this race from a fancying Kenboy perspective and going, okay, Frodon, I find it hard to support Paul Nichols horse at the moment with the way the string is going. Asterion Fernandes is going to be short, and you just can't trust him. You know, he's probably the most talented horse in this field, but you need to be rewarded with a price to invest in him at this stage, I find.
Did he see out
the
3 miles?
I thought he came home okay. I think he's fine. I just think of what's happened between his 2 ears. You know, he can throw in that odd mistake. I think 2 out was the finishing of the race for him, because he had made a really good leap, I think 3 out, and just began to get himself into a position, and then he did what he always does and just puts himself on the back foot. And, you know, it's frustrating for him. It will click for him one day, but, just forecasting when that day is going to be can be expensive if you're a follower. And Manel Endo was coming here, like Henry de Bromhead had said during the week, it was almost in a bid to replicate what he did in last year's prep for the Gold Cup. And I thought he emerged with credit, but at the same time, I would like to see him finish closer to the winner for looking at Gold Cup games. I feel the winner, it is a smart horse, but it's going to be tricky for him. I think he might fall between two stools. I don't know if he'd really relish an out-and-out stamina test of a Gold Cup, but I don't know whether he'd have the class of an Alaho or be quite pacey enough to handle that. So, you know, maybe, I'm sure Connections will have a go at Cheltenham, or that, you know, they have every right to have a go at Cheltenham, but something like Aintree Punchestown might be a little bit more up his street. Albeit, if you look at the Gold Cup this year, you can make a case that it isn't going to be an absolute slog like we have seen in some years. But I'd be a little bit windy on here in terms of a form level, while still being appreciative of an absolute masterstroke from Gordon Elliott, because how many horses trainers would have ran this horse here? You know, he would have got £2 from Manella Times if you ran a handicap chase the following day for 125 grand, 150 grand. Like that would look the logical thing to do. But Gordon Elliott sees things differently to other people. And I thought this was a genius stroke from him to pull the horse here. So hats off to that team for doing it. But it wasn't a piece of form that I can really sink my teeth into at this stage.
Okay, if you do fancy him for the Gold Cup, he's a best price 12-1. Chris, how do you see that race shaping up? Appleutard, he's probably quietly laughing to himself in his box, the 3-1 favourite. Galvin, who's also in Cullen Trial, 4-1. Manella Indo, people seem divided on whether he actually strengthened his Gold Cup claims at the weekend. And then Protectorat, who's a bit of a dark horse, at 8-1. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I'm running a poll on my Front Runner newsletter about where Conflated Shoe go. If you're his owner, does he go Ryanair or Gold Cup, or maybe do you just say straight to the Grand National? Probably not that, actually, because he's just blown his rating to smithereens, hasn't he, by winning the Irish Gold Cup. Anyway, the early results say 44% Gold Cup, 38% Ryanair. Of course, he is owned by the sponsors. And you'd say he's won that race with speed, wouldn't you? It's not a great display of stamina. They haven't gone a sort of thrillingly strong pace. And he's sort of just quickened at the right moment to catch the rest of them, and able to go with them. I'd say that was the performance of a Ryanair horse. But, if you win the Irish Gold Cup, it's very difficult to say, let's skip the Cheltenham Gold Cup. You know, it's the natural race to go for. It's the one that, you know, everyone would like to win. I think he's still quite a big price for the Ryanair. I find that interesting. Manella Indo, I thought, ran a pretty good Gold Cup trial, bearing in mind that he always seems to improve when he gets to Cheltenham in March. It's a better race than he ran, I think, in the same race last year. And he'd be the one I'd take out of the race sort of going forward to the Gold Cup. But you're right, probably it's an encouraging race for anyone who's not actually in the Irish Gold Cup. You know, Appleutar and Galvin, anyone who's backed those would not be worried, I think, about particularly what happened on Saturday.
Slightly left field one, Chris. Ahoy Senor. Connections seemed that they were leaning towards the 3 miles novice race, the Brown Advisory, but he does still have a Gold Cup entry. What would you do?
Yeah, well, I'm sure they'll make the right decision. I think, generally speaking, going for the Gold Cup with a novice is a risky option. When Königgree managed it, I think he was the first in decades to win the Gold Cup as a novice. Everybody started saying, well, this was a great thing to do, because of course you don't know with these big old horses if they'll still be sound the following year, if they'll be in the same form. But I think Ahoy Senor could probably still do with some experience of more competitive races than the one he had on Saturday. And again, it was the case on Saturday, I felt that there was really one horse in the race that was rated high enough to give him a proper contest, and that was Saint Palais that won the Mandarin. He's walked into the first two fences in the straight and just not given his running and finished last. So it turned into a relatively straightforward task for a horse in your, and he's correcting right at a lot of his fences. You know, I think if he meets a fence wrong, either he lacks the experience or the athleticism to adjust just at this stage of his career. You know, I think keeping him in novice company has a lot to be said for it.
Okay, let's move on to one of the really exciting youngsters we saw. On Saturday was Fasar Vega's go. He won as the 8-11 favourite, the son of the mighty Quivega, of course. Some big reputations coming in to this Goff's Future Stars INH flat race, Mark. Did they all run their race in behind, though?
I'm not too sure whether we saw the very best from one or two of them, but I think they could have probably ran their best and they'd be still second or third. God, he was very good. This was the performance of the weekend for me. It's right up there with kind of Dunguib territory in terms of bumper. Wow. Just so good. Just so good. And, you know, we see a lot of the time horses with reputations and, you know, you can expect a lot of them. And maybe you go in there and you view them through a certain prism that they kind of have to match that standard. Well, you know, I held this fella really, really highly after what he did at Christmas, but I was still surprised and still impressed by how good he was here. You know, he exceeded expectations that I had already set, which were pretty high. And you get the sense that Willie Mullins just thinks the absolute world of him.
Had he then killed Crut 12 months ago?
Better than Kilcrut. You know, Kilcrut's race was an absolute, it seemed to be such a big, big stamina test. You could see horses walking up the straight. I'm not saying they weren't tired and behind here because he did run them ragged, but this looked a really quality bumper going into it. And I think you'd have to have sympathy for Paul Nolan to a certain degree, who has some very, very smart bumper horses on his hands and some smart young horses full stop. But like he ran Joyu Mashan, who since won at Navan, but he finished second to Fasal Vega over Christmas. He looks a really, really good horse. And he comes here with Sandor Kilgan, who was bolted up by something crazy. It was a 20 lengths or something like that at Punchestown. He won. And he runs into a brick wall here as well. You know, it's just, it goes to show that I think there's serious depth to what this horse is achieving as well, Fasal Vega. You know, I'm always conscious here of this. You know, we can get swept up in some of these horses. I don't like going into auto praise mode like that, but I genuinely think this is the start of something very, very special. It was so good. Were you impressed, Matty? Am I going a bit over the top here, or did you get the same kick out of it?
I thought it was a remarkable performance, Mark, yeah. And I want to believe the hype, and I think it's a really wonderful story that we've got that sort of line of bloodstock as well, particularly with the relationship that the racing public had with Quivega. I do worry about the likes of It's What Unites Us, Embassy Gardens, the Big Doyenne. We're hoping that they would really put it up to Fasal Vega. Sandor Clagan did, but not so much the ones that I mentioned. But this is a really, really exciting prospect. And I think he showed that he had more pace than Kilcrut. Kilcrut seemed to sort of coast in off a pace collapse. This horse appeared to quicken, which is going to be a huge skill in his armoury. What did you make of it, Chris?
Well, I was just going to say, just to be the bucket of cold water in this conversation, I see that Kilcrut was actually rated 142 by Racing Post Ratings for his win in the same race last year, whereas Fasal Vega's only got to 136. So, I mean, you know, according to RPR, this
interesting, yeah,
time between those performances. I mean, it's very difficult, isn't it, to be sure when you're rating horses that haven't had many runs. But I mean, we know from Kilcrut, you know, he's taken three goes to win a maiden hurdle. That early promise doesn't always translate. At the same time, I think basically I'd rather join in with you and be excited about this because it was a great performance. And, you know, it's a great story being second foal out of Quivega. We'd all love this to be a good horse.
We would. Another horse who we would love to be very good, he already is Galopin des Champs. We're going to talk about just how high he can fly after this.
Are you football crazy? Then Racing Post's new podcast could be just for you. Mark Langdon's Bet Clubs brings all of the best football betting insight from Racing Post's top football tipster. As well as that, Mark will be joined each week by a friend from the betting community to guide listeners through their best bets. Simply search Mark Langdon's Bet Clubs on your podcast app of choice and listen today.
Welcome back to this Monday postcast, and the wonderful horses' big performances just keep coming. Next, we're going to review Galopin des Champs, who won the Grade 1 Ladbrokes Novice Chase as the 4-9 favourite. And I watched this race back this morning, Chris, and I thought people were being a little bit too harsh on his jumping early on. I think he's just got an incredible amount of scope. I'm in love with him, so I'm a bit biased. But would you be worried if you were looking ahead to Cheltenham that he's a bit too bold at his fences?
No, I think it's everybody else who's trying to beat him that's got something to worry about. I did even suck it into betting against him in running, just watching that race, because there were a few sort of decent horses in the race, and you think he's just so short, isn't he, on the basis of one previous run over fences, and that wasn't even a graded race. Obviously he's talented, but people can get carried away with the extent of it. But very shortly after that, I was losing runners, because Capodanno fell, and or unseated, didn't he, and Beacon Edge fell at the one after. Even so, the names that are behind them are quality animals that have proven their ability and didn't seem to have any obvious excuses. So, yeah, he, much as I'm always trying to get popular horses beat, he looks a monster.
He does look a monster. And Master McShee's not a bad horse either. He finished second for Ian Power and Paddy Corkery. Great story, that, wasn't it? Mark, I've said to you before on this show that I really want him to run in the Turners over 2 miles, 4.5 furlongs. And I think you agree with me, don't you? I just think he's so full of natural pace, this horse.
Yeah, I don't see any reason why not to. I know Willie is a firm believer in that if a horse isn't jumping, I gather that Willie, when he sees a horse maybe that isn't jumping particularly well, he's keen to step them up and trip to help them in that regard, where you'll be jumping at a slower pace. But I really liked when Paul just let this fella ball on down towards kind of 3 out, 2 out. And, I think he seemed to enjoy that kind of freedom. Now, I'm not saying you can just go and tear away at Cheltenham like he did on his chasing debut, but I think jumping at speed is no issue to this horse. I think you fear going down an Alloho Road if you do go to the Brown Advisory, to be quite honest, where it turns into a slog. Should in a high senior running that race, you'd imagine it's going to be a stamina test. You're probably going to have a brave man's game, etc. While I think that this horse is probably naturally more talented, I wouldn't like to see a scenario where you're having to bottom out his stamina reserves. And Ruby Walsh has pointed out last week that, running him over 3 miles at the Bunchestown Festival last season in that Grade One novice hurdle was as much a case of Willie, picking his punches and separating his team of novice hurdlers as best he could. Echoes and Rain won the 2 mile, Haught and Colours the 2.5, and this fellow went to the 3 mile, or Haught and Colours, sorry, Guyer de Menil. So, he used the phrase, he didn't think that anybody really viewed him as an out-and-out 3-miler. I've no doubt he will stay further. He's not slow. Watch back the Martin Pipe, you'll see him travelling through the race. To me, it's a straightforward sort of a call that, I wouldn't fear Bob Hollinger either from having a crack at him in the 2.5. I think his jumping is just, when he's absolutely at his best, I think he'll come on for that experience as well. To go from one beginner's chase run into a Grade One that on the surface looked a good race going into it. I know he had some notable fallers, etc. He's the one to beat in the Turners for me, whether Bob Olinger is there or not. I really, really like to see him go there.
Yes, and from one Willie Mullins trained horse to another, let's talk about Jacques Bourgeois, who bounced back with another win in the Ladbrokes Dublin Chase. Chris, is it a formality that Paul Townley chooses his stablemate in Ergamine if they both run in the Champion Chase?
It'd be really difficult, wouldn't it? I think it's a formality, surely, that he's going to try and imagine how he can separate these two horses and try and talk the connections into running them in different races or not running them against each other. Because, that's what your top jockeys do, isn't it? They don't want to be making these decisions. They'd rather have two chances in two races than get beat by the stablemate. He was very good, but then he was fully entitled to be as good. We know what he is. I guess he's got to the age of 10 and you can worry about the aging factor, but no sign of that yet. But again, the second favorite in this race was Grenadine from the Paul Nicholls yard, who on the face of it has just not run his race again. He was well held in last place. We're not seeing anything particularly new here, and the factor with Jacques Bourgeois to worry about is that he didn't seem to run to his form when he went over to Cheltenham last year. He was £10 below what we expect from him, and there may have been race-specific reasons for that. But if I was Paul and you're faced with the choice, that's the reason why you go with an Ergamine, knowing that he's okay. You got beat by Shishkin the other day, but he's very close to him. Different circumstances in this race that might actually tilt the field in your favour. That's the choice I'd expect him to make.
Yeah, neither of these horses Cheltenham winners. Shishkin's currently the 4-6 favourite, and Nergamine 100-30, Chacon-Possoir 5-1, and it's Nubin Negra next in at 11s. Mark, Chacon-Possoir, he's not always brought his A game to other places in the same way he has done to Leopardstown. You're a big fan of his, I know. I ate humble pie a little bit this weekend with him because I've not always been a believer. Just how much has he got left to show us at his age now?
I'm not panicked totally about his age. I know there are some people that will be, you know, and stats will tell you that it is harder once you get up the years to do so. But this horse has spent plenty of time on the sideline. You know, he spent 1,089 days out before he made his debut from Willie, between having finished third to King Sox of all horses in France. You know, I'm not too panicked in that regard. And I was over the moon to see him come back and produce a performance like this, because, you know, I firmly believe he is well capable of putting it up to Shishkin and Ergamine. And I'm, you know, last year you had to kind of answer questions when you're doing these previews about, you know, oh, does he get up the hill, all that sort of stuff. And I never had a doubt. That doesn't bother me still. I feel that more so last year, I thought Willie's comments were interesting after today, more so last year's Cheltenham performance, been a little bit below his best, was to do maybe with his preparation going into the race. Like, on the clock, he was posting such impressive figures at Leopardstown at Christmas at the Dublin Racing Festival. And I thought we just saw a little bit of that taking the edge off him when we went to Cheltenham for the Champion Chase. He was 8-13 going there. He was 12-1 for the Champion Chase before this weekend, which is kind of mad. But he still didn't run bad. You know, people seem to talk about this run as if it was dismal. You know, he's beaten a length and a half in a race that probably didn't exactly turn out ideally in terms of pace. He goes back to Punchestown and puts the record straight. Now, I know it's very easy. People are going to again say, oh, he doesn't travel. Like, draw a line through the Sandown run. You know, you have the excuse of him. I think he took the chestnut off a hock. And then he also has a hamstring injury. Like, I'm very happy to just draw a line through that Sandown run. And on that basis, you have one day where, you know, he has probably disappointed, really, since he's come to Willie Mullins' property. Barring the day he got beat by Appletard at Christmas. I think there's only one other day, really, that you can look at him and go, you know, where there hasn't been a legitimate physical excuse where you'd like to see more from him. I think he's awesome. Willie's comments about him afterwards, where he's suggesting, you know, coming into this season, like, and even right now, you get the feeling that this is his number one 2 mile Jason type. You know, he really, like, you know, I've been on previews with Willie before, you know, on press calls, and people have put it to him, you know, is this horse up there, you know, on our figures, let's say this horse is up there with the best 2 milers you've had, with that, and best chasers that you've had, would that tally with you? And he has no hesitancy in saying, yes, absolutely it is. You know, I don't think he has that much ground to make up to be banged there in a Champion Chase. For all that, I have the world of respect for Shishkin and Ergamine, and I really hope Shishkin and Ergamine do bring their best to Cheltenham, but you can't be certain that that race last time isn't going to have a little bit of a knock-on effect. It was a proper duel. Maybe a little bit more worried for an Ergamine than Shishkin in that department. Although Shishkin, we saw after he won the Arkle last year, he was flat at entry, big effort in the Arkle, so far the next day, goes for a wind-up. You know, I really think the Chacon-Possoir is still underestimated in this market. And the key point, the last thing I say on him, Willie's comments yesterday that he thought he might send him to Cheltenham a little bit undercooked rather than overcooked, was music to my ears, because I know they felt they didn't ride him right at Cheltenham last year. I don't necessarily think that was the problem as much as his prep, let's say, that having hard races going in there, bang, bang, bang. This time around, he didn't run at Christmas. I think it's going to set up really, really nicely for him. And if you give me a free tenner on the Champion Chase, I know where to be. It'd be absolutely Chacon-Possoir for me.
Such an impassioned speech. I really love that.
It nearly upsets me with this horse. I don't get that way with many horses, Manny. But gee, I'm sick of hearing people, you know, saying he doesn't travel, whatever. He's like Guinness. He doesn't travel. I could maybe eat humble pie myself come March again if he disappoints me. But I really think this is one of the best 2 mile chasers around, if not the very best one right now. You know, I was only sorry he didn't get to run the Champion Chase the year he stood on the stone, or whatever he did to himself in 2020. But I'd love to see him get back there and have a crack at them again. And I get the feeling from William Mullins' comments that he really can't wait either.
Well, one horse who never disappoints is Honeysuckle. She made it a magical 14 out of 14 in winning her third Irish Champion hurdle yesterday. Just an electric performance. We've spoken a couple of times already on this show about Henry de Bromhead's form, but it doesn't seem to impact her. She's just immune to it. And I guess the turn of foot that she showed coming wide and coming quite early with her run mark was the trademark sort of real class that she showed here that won her the race, was it?
Yeah, sure. It's so hard to find fault in her. I know maybe on one occasion there, I was a little bit concerned when she jumped left, but you know, like it's always straightforward for her, you know. And the remarkable thing, especially when you look at, you know, horses at grades below or even grades that she's running at, consistency in horses is so hard to find, where you can have just flawless performances or, you know, a flawless record. Do throw in disappointing runs that are inexplicable from time to time, but she just hasn't even threatened to do that. She barely ever looks like losing. And I think for all that she is talented, you can maybe say that she isn't beating maybe the same horses as a Hurricane Fly had to beat in his pomp, or, you know, I'm not so sure what the depth of what's behind her. Shirley is amazing with this mare. And there is a chance that, you know, they physically feel that she's better this year than ever before. Like, we could see another explosion from her at Cheltenham, and, you know, because we saw that she was brilliant in this race last year, but she was awesome at Cheltenham. It's really, really exciting. You'd would love, you know, another top horse to come at her. And maybe it's going to be appreciated. And I like the fact that for the weekend with the Dublin Race Festival, you'd like to see appreciated come and have a crack at her and have a big duel. If you want to have a go at Honeysuckle, you know, when you're going for the Queen, you best not miss. You know, you have to be absolutely really swinging. And he might swing and miss still, but that'll be really, really exciting. Her consistency, though, just amazes me.
It will. Chris, I guess you're in a good position to talk about the history of racing a bit more and contextualise what Honeysuckle has achieved. We know she has this £7 advantage. Some people think
that is the most polite way of saying that I'm the oldest one in this conversation.
I did try and say it in a nice way. but how do you compare her to other great two-milers that you've seen?
It's hard to do that because, you know, she's not on level terms, is she? And I mean, this is where I really want to start with this race, because, OK, we talked about it endlessly, and, you know, people hate it when you rain on anyone's parade. And I don't want to do that. She's a great mare, but she's getting half a stone from these horses. And Zana here technically comes out the best horse in the race because he's only beaten 6.5 lengths. So you could say that, you know, I don't think she was eased down either, Honeysuckle. I'm just watching the replay again. Rachel sort of urging her forwards all the way. I mean, she's not absolutely driving her out. And if there's another horse coming to challenge her, you know, I dare say she'd respond, she'd find more. So the 6.5 lengths underplays her superiority. But she's rated £6 ahead of Zana here. And at the weights, they come out nearly the same horse. And Echoes in Rain was a close third. He's rated £22 below her. So this is something that, you know, she ought to be doing against these horses. I would really love it if we could get her into a race where she's on level weights with these geldings that are taking her on, and I dare say she'd still beat them, but then we would know, wouldn't we? And we wouldn't be left wondering and arguing about it. I totally accept the argument for the mare's allowance and the need for it, the historical need for it, the current need for it, but there should be 5 or 6 races a year where we just don't have it, championship races, and we find out who's best, and the Irish Champion Hurdle really ought to be one of those races. So anyway, that said, I mean, she's of course she's got to be up there with those sort of great race mares that you remember, you know, Annie Power, and if you go a bit further back, Flaky Dove, who wouldn't have had her consistency, but, you know, at her very best, could mix it with those other horses. And you know, it strikes me that with jumps mares, there's a sort of hardiness when you get the very best ones that you don't necessarily see, a kind of a durability and a reliability that you don't always get from the geldings. Honeysuckle really seems to want to please, and always seems to go out there and give her best and never has an off day. And that's really admirable. And it was lovely to see those scenes when she and Rachel came back to the winner's enclosure. I think Ruby described it as Cheltenham-esque, the way that people were coming out of nooks and crannies all around Leopardstown to rush to the winner's enclosure and greet them. She's that kind of horse. You hope that she's, you know, cementing the affection for racing for lots of young fans that were able to see her at the weekend and watch on telly. So, you know, I guess there's no downside. But as I say, I do feel that we're not doing the best thing for our very best races by persisting with that particular allowance.
Okay, you've been quite vocal on that quite a few times, haven't you, Chris? So interesting that you still stand by that in the wake of Honeysuckle's fantastic victory on Sunday. Quickly, she is a 4-7 chance for the champion hurdle. Appreciate It, who Mark mentioned, 7-1 Charger, runner-up in the race before nines. Epitant, the other mare, getting another £7 at 14. Zanahir, who finished second on Sunday, 16s, 25-1. But if I were to give you a tenner to stick on a horse each way, Mark, who would you be looking towards in the champion hurdle?
Oh, each way. Maybe Zanahir again. I find it hard to... I think for all that I was so impressed with Honeysuckle, really stuck at it. Like, Echoes and Rain, fair enough. She doesn't...
Made a bad mistake early as well, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, like, this horse is only 5. And that is one thing I will say in agreement with Chris's argument. Like, the fact that he's 5... and he's rated inferior to her, but he's given a mare weight who's older than him as well. You know, it's such a hard task for these, you know, juvenile herders of a previous season to step up into open company. I think a 16-1 about him is more than fair each way. I don't think he'll beat Honeysuckle. I don't think anything will beat Honeysuckle. But maybe just him at 16-1, I'd have a crack at him each way.
Okay, Chris?
Just to be really mischievous, if you want an each way bet in the champion hurdle, I feel like I'm giving the main prize to Honeysuckle. That's just going to happen, isn't it? But what about Goshen? Because not reliable, and you couldn't even be sure they're going to go there. And they swore blind last year that they would never go there again. But I see that after his run at the weekend, Gary Moore said it will be the owner's decision. I mean, he's won, hasn't he? And it's the Kingwell next, and if he wins there, it'd be hard to say no to having a go at another champion hurdle. 66-1 now, and you know what the top of this horse's ability is like. You know, if he's suddenly tractable and biddable and you know he's going to behave himself, I mean, I guess he's not all those things, but he still might run to a high level and nick a place. So that to me is where the value is, but as long as you accept that there's a very real chance that he won't actually show.
Okay, we are storming into the final furlong of this show today. But before we go, and before indeed we look at Newbury, how does Sir Gerhard fit into the supreme picture now? A horse seems to come out every week and advertise his credentials for the race. El Fabiolo was a notable non-runner, Mark. I know you're a big fan of him. Constitution Hill, the 2-1 favourite. Dysart Dynamo, 4s. Sir Gerhard, biggest 9-2, John Bon, biggest 5-1, and then Mighty Potter is 14-1. I wasn't that impressed, were you?
Thought he was good, but didn't blow me away. I tell you what did blow me away, though. I was standing at the front of the stands at Leopardstown, and the roars of the crowd, it was like the Gold Cup at Cheltenham, the way they were roaring this horse home. I'm sure part of that was fueled by various multiples that have been building up during the day with the favourites that were winning, but... it was just brilliant to be back racing in Ireland with a crowd that were absolutely loving it and in full voice. Really, really enjoyed that. And actually what Chris is saying with the reaction to Honeysuckle, I was at the front of the stands watching it, and I walked back towards the parade ring and people were running, and there was benches that were supposed to be sitting around, let's say, between races, having a bit of food. Guys were running and pulling benches to be able to stand up on top of these benches near the winner's enclosure to be shouting in and roaring at Honeysuckle. It was fantastic. But to get back to Sir Gerhard, I think Dysart Dynamo is the better supreme candidate for William Mullins, and it wouldn't shock me one bit if he stepped up to the Ballymore trip. Jumping wise, that could be the way to go with him. For all he was slick at Christmas, a couple of occasions there, I wasn't bowled over. Wouldn't be hammering him for his jumping, but I think it makes sense considering the depth in the two races that Sir Gerhard could have a crack at the Ballymore.
I do love it when we're singing from the same hymn sheet, Mark. We're both big Dysart Dynamo fans, aren't we?
So is that's a great sign or a terrible sign?
Yeah, that's our view on the Supreme. We'll be back in a minute to talk Betfair Hurdle at Newbury. 16 exciting handicappers for us to discuss.
The Racing Postcast is supported by Racing Post Members Club. Featuring award-winning journalism, expert tips, and renowned form study tools, this is the only racing subscription you need to stay ahead of the field. If you're a new customer, you can use the code POST22, that's POST22, to get 50% off your first 3 months of Members Club Ultimate. That works out at just £17.48 per month to unlock all of the premium features, and it renews at full price thereafter. Head to racingpost.com/postcast for all of the details and to claim.
We are trudging ever closer to the Cheltenham Festival, but there's top class action at Newbury and Warwick this weekend. The big race is the Betfair Hurdle at 3:35 on Saturday. Let's run you through a recent market that we have. Broomfield Berg for Nicky Henderson is a 5-1 shot, but alongside him is JPR1 from the Colin Tizard stable and Nappers Hill from Paul Nichols' yard, where the hill run, given the form of the Nichols horses, remains to be seen. 7-1 Jetoile, also Soaring Glory, last year's winner. 8-1 Boot Hill and Metier, and the remainder are 10-1 and bigger. What's the first thing you look for in a Betfair Hurdle horse, Chris?
I don't know if there's a type. There's certainly not a type that I've got in mind. I mean, the fundamental point would be is you've got to be a horse that's ahead of his rating, and not, well, there might be a few in this race. I tell you, for this year, though, I'm in particular, I'm looking for Gary Moore. We mentioned him earlier. He's having the best season he's ever had. And he's got winning history in this that goes quite a long way back. Unhelpfully, Gary's still got three horses in this race. So in a minute, I'm going to go away and sort of pick over the form and decide which of them I like best and maybe see if I can get clues to which one might actually turn up. Maybe he'll run them all. But it's interesting that 50 Ball is in there, having been second in the race last year, been running over fences this season. And not, you know, the last couple of times it hasn't gone particularly well. So 7-year-old, still young enough. It'd be interesting if he comes back to hurdles for this race. You know, we know that he's got the quality. And I think he's off the same rating as when he was second to Soaring Glory a year ago. So that's the way I'm looking to begin with.
Do you know, when I looked at this race before we came on, he was the horse that I was drawn to as well. He is indeed off the same mark. And he's around 20-1 best price at the moment. So perhaps you'll see me and Chris big up 50 Ball a little bit more. There are a lot of unexposed horses in the race, though, Mark. Would you be looking towards one of those?
But typically, I like a horse with less weight than the one I'm going to put forward. But Soaring Glory, I find it hard. Look, beyond, I don't want to use it as a brilliant renewal of the race. You know, I'm disappointed with the turnout. What, just 16 left in? You know, not to be pouring cold water on this, because it's still going to be enjoyable. But I would like to have seen a little more left in here. I know we don't always see a huge amount of Irish horses here, maybe linked to the fact that we have the Liffey Handicap Hurdle, 2 miles, 125 grand or 150 grand, ran on Sunday for a similar category of horse, if not the very same. So, but Soaring Glory, I find it hard to look beyond them. I know I like him a little bit lower in the weights for it, but I don't think he can knock what he's done a whole pile. You know, you look at the run of Christmas, for all the Lepitant wasn't fantastic or at her best necessarily. I think it was a grand run. You get the feeling that a pot like this, having kind of kept him a little bit on the quiet side, it'll be 7 weeks since his last run. I'd be very, very happy to have a go at him again. He's going to be higher in the weights than last year, the Stone higher, I think, but I wouldn't have been shocked at all if Connections had mapped this out from quite a long way out. So Soaring Glory for me, but I definitely am very interested in your value pick there at 50 Ball.
Yeah, we're all clearly looking at last year's race when it comes to 12 months on. No one really wanting to put their weight behind one of the new contenders coming forward. Who have you guys got for us coming up this week as your naps then? Chris, I'll go to you first.
This will not be beaten.
Get a Star, who I think, if I'm right, has been declared at the final entry stage. Yes, he has, for the 4:07 at Sedgefield on Wednesday. It's not actually a brilliant time of year in my mind to be backing Peter Bowen horses. He hasn't had that many runners lately. I tend to think of him more as a sort of, you know, summer, late spring, summer, early autumn kind of trainer. But this one put in a really interesting chasing debut back in November at Lingfield. I think he's just run into one of Gary Moore's that was just miles ahead of its mark. But he's run second. He's, you know, he's beaten the others. The third horse won next time and got raised, I think, £8. Gets a Star, gets to run again this week off the same rating he had that day at Lingfield. I think he's ahead of his mark. It might be that he's going to need this run. It'll be his first for 3 months. But I'm sure that Peter Bowen's got it in his mind that this horse is ahead of his rating, and he might well have him ready to strike. So I shall be with him, whatever.
He's a very good target trainer, isn't he, Peter Bowen? Mark, what do you think?
We have a fairly light schedule so far, what we can see over this side of the water. So I'm going to take a swing at one. It's probably going to be a big price. at Fairy House on Wednesday in the 1:15, a 2.5 handicap chase. Winging a Prayer is a horse that at times now has let himself down with his jumping, but when he puts it all together, and I think he's going to be a decent price. He definitely has one in him off of Marker 1-2-3. Robbie Power has been out of action for a while, but he's back all guns blazing again now since his injury. And he gets a good chin out of this fella. He won it down Royal on him previously in a maiden hurdle back along the way. I'm not in any way grabbing who's been riding him since because I've got loads of time for Sean O'Keefe. But from a jumping point of view, I love Robbie Power getting horses into a proper rhythm who maybe are a little bit, it's just a theory I have at times, that horses who can maybe not attack their fences on the idea stride. Robbie can make their mind up for them really well. I think this horse is just the type of one that Robbie will click with, and he knows them already. So look, it's going to be a big price. It's an open handicap chase. Some of them have already done. They're winning to a certain extent or have gone up in the weights. Whereas this fella off 1-2-3, I think he can be competitive. So Winging a Prayer, the 1:15 at Fairy House, a tentative each way selection.
We like big prices, so we appreciate you giving that a go. That's all from us on today's show. Thank you so much for joining us for this review of the Dublin Racing Festival. Please make sure to rate, review and subscribe. As always, the team will be back on Friday to have a further look at the weekend's cards. We'll see you again very shortly.